Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and how we can live toxic free. Because there's so many toxic chemicals around, so many toxic things that we're exposed to, that we need to be able to identify them, we need to know where they are, and we need to know what to do in order to protect our health, physical, mental, spiritual, and our happiness, and raise our children well, and have a future. And just do everything that we want to do in life that often toxic chemicals prevent us from doing because they're making our bodies sick. Today, we're going to be talking about radiation. And the reason that we're talking about radiation today is because I saw an article we've all been watching for the past few years about Fukushima, the radiation coming from the nuclear plant when there was the earthquake. And this spring, it's being expected that radiation from Japan from that earthquake will be arriving in small amounts, but arriving on the west coast of the United States. There was an article about how a group of people have gotten together to do what they're calling a citizen scientist program, and they're crowdsourcing funding to have water tested along the west coast, and that people have to find out how much we're actually being exposed to this radiation. And so the federal government does not consider this to be a priority because the levels are so low. Still, people, citizens, are considering this as to be something that we want to find out about. And I'm glad they are doing that. There's a website called ourradioactiveocean.org, and there's lots of information there that shows what's going on as to how much radiation is happening. So that's something that you can check on. Another thing that prompted me to do this was last summer, I think it was. It was last summer. I interviewed a woman named Corey Trusty. She has a business where she makes soap. It's called Aquarian Bath. And I interviewed her because she does not use plastic in her business. She's a plastic-free business, and she wraps everything in paper and all of that. But one of the things that she makes is what she calls a detox soap with zeolite and activated charcoal and bentonite clay. And the point, she actually lives on the West Coast, and she has her own meter so that she can check the radioactivity where she lives. And this was last summer, she found that there was sufficient radiation that she needed to develop this soap so that when people are exposed to radiation, they can wash with this particular soap and it will take the radiation off of their bodies. So people are concerned about this. It's invisible. It's not something that you're going to walk outside and say, oh, there's radioactivity. But it's something that we need to understand and we need to learn how to protect ourselves. So I have here today toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's been with us before. He's the director and founder of the Institute of Neurotoxicology. He's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. And he has a wonderful site called Toxipedia.org. And before we start talking, I just want to tell you that you can go to Toxipedia.org, and everything that we're going to talk about today is on the website for free, and you can read it. It's in the chapter about radiation in his book, A Small Dose of Toxicology, and you can get that for free right on his website. And because this is something that you're probably going to want to read about, it's just not enough to have it go by and listen to it. This is an important subject that we all need to be concerned about. Hi, Dr. Gilbert. Hello? Hello, hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good. I can hear you.
Okay,
hi.
Good. Hi there.
So you're over there on the west coast of the United States where the radiation is coming.
I am. So we're watching for it. It's supposed to arrive in the next month or so, underwater, an ocean plume of radioactivity at very low levels. But it's not something we want to see on the West Coast.
No, it's not. So if there's a plume coming in on the ocean, How would people be exposed to that if they're not in the ocean?
No, it's in the ocean. I mean, the thing to be concerned about is potential for fish to concentrate the radioactive particles. And there's some concern about tuna doing that because they're long-lived fish, and they would concentrate particularly the cesium and the strontium, the radionuclides that were part of the contaminants that were released by the Fukushima reactors that melted down. But these fish have been tested, too, and they're at very low levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least up till now.
Well, we'll see what happens. Something to watch out for. But tell us, I know you've been on before. I always like to start with people's history. So why don't you give us just a little bit of background about you, just for the people who haven't heard you before?
Oh, my background is I did a lot of work on lead and mercury. I was very interested in protecting children's central nervous systems and making sure they could reach, maintain their full potential. And from there, I wrote the book, Small Dose of Toxicology. And my view is that we have tremendous amounts of knowledge. The challenge is using this knowledge to make good decisions and understanding the consequences of chemical exposures. And have to remember that children are not little adults. They eat more, breathe more, and drink more than adults do per body weight, and thus get a bigger exposure. If children are more sensitive to radiation exposure, for example, particularly something like radioactive iodine that can get to their thyroid and cause thyroid cancer. But my interest has been in how do we make better decisions given the information we have, protecting children from lead, mercury exposure, and other contaminants in our environment, and the chemicals we use.
And he's doing a very good job at this. I find out of all the information that I've read in the past 30 years, the easiest information to understand is Dr. Gilbert's. So
Thank you, Deborah. That's very kind of you.
You're welcome. Well, it's true. And I just think everybody should go to toxopedia.org, and it's the easiest place for a person who's not a scientist to understand what the chemical exposures are and some things that you can do about it. And he's also got some very fascinating information about the history and the ethics and everything that has to do with toxicology. So,
for example, we highlighted Rachel Carson because in 1964, Rachel Carson died today in 1964.
I saw that, and really I was going to mention it, so I'm glad you mentioned it. Rachel Carson is one of my heroes. I think that most people don't realize. I didn't read, how old was I in 1964? I was 9 years old. So obviously I wasn't reading Silent Spring, but Silent Spring is such a perennial classic that I could have read it at any point in time, but I didn't until, even though I was interested in toxics, I didn't read it until about 3 years ago, I think. I read it one summer. And all of a sudden I realized that I had always thought that it was an environmental book because she was talking about the birds. That's why it's called Silent Spring, because the birds weren't singing anymore because the pesticides had killed them. And so I always thought of it as being environmental. But then I hit this chapter where she talked about pesticides in human exposure. And I realized that that was probably the very first book for the general public about human exposures to toxic chemicals. That was a warning way back in 1964. And yet nobody was doing anything about it.
Yeah, there's a great quote from Rachel Carson. It's on the front page of Toxopedia right now. It says, "We are rightly appalled by genetic effects of radiation. How then can we be indifferent to the same effects in chemicals we disseminate widely in our environment?"
Yeah.
She's a remarkable, amazing woman.
She is. And I highly recommend that everybody also read Silent Spring. It just is, it sets a context for where we are today, and that all these things were known back in 1964. And it's taken us so long to do what we need to do to make things right. But that's part of why we're here on Toxic Free Talk Radio, in order to push this forward. We're going to take a break.
The challenge is using the information we have to make good decisions. And we've known a lot of this stuff back in Rachel Carson's time. And we're still overexposing ourselves to pesticides, misusing chemicals, not understanding their toxic properties, and exposing our children to them. And we're not thinking about the future generations.
Well, you and I are making a difference about this, I know. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll find out about radiation. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Stephen Gilbert, and his website is toxipedia.org. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. We're talking about radiation, and Dr. Gilbert, would you explain what radiation is?
That's a big question.
It is a big question, and I always get confused about it.
From photosynthesis onward, and where we look at the sun, I'm sure everybody enjoys a little bit of sunshine, and that sunshine is important for the warmth it provides, as well as the photosynthesis of plants, and really sustains life. But as with all things, you know, we know that sun can also be dangerous. If you're out in the sun too much, many of us get a sunburn, and that can be very hazardous to our health. So it's always a balance, and that's called non-ionizing radiation. We depend on radiation for our cell phones, for our telephone, our communication. We use enormous amounts of energy. A lot of that's radiation. And the ionizing radiation is what's given off by radioactive particles that are decaying, and they can damage your health, and they come in the form of alpha and beta particles and gamma rays. So there's a wide spectrum of radiation. A lot of our understanding of radiation came at the turn of the century with Marie Curie, for example, is one of the leaders in this about radium. But it was really not until World War II during the 40s that we learned how to build nuclear reactors, and the first reactor to go critical was of any major scale was the B reactor. It was in Richland, Washington, in the Hanford Reach area, called Hanford Nuclear Testing Grounds. And the B reactor produced the plutonium, and that's what these reactors did. They really manufactured plutonium, and learning how to do that was really incredibly scientifically challenging, as well as really interesting. But the tragic part of it is that plutonium can be used to create nuclear weapons. And they did that. The first nuclear bomb was set off at Trinity, and another bomb was the new plutonium-constructed bomb destroyed Nagasaki. But the basic design of the reactors went on to create nuclear power reactors, and you have to remember that a nuclear power reactor is basically boils water to drive big turbines. So and this produces radioactive waste, and that's very hazardous, and we've struggled to deal with this radioactive waste problem for a long time. And that's when the reactors melt down. So in Fukushima, there have been other nuclear reactor accidents, too, from Three Mile and Chernobyl. They contaminated enormous amounts of the earth and displaced many millions of people. And we have many millions of people now in the United States, around the world, that live within 50 miles of a nuclear reactor and have to be, you know, thoughtful and be aware that there are potential hazards of nuclear reactors, and meltdown of Fukushima is just an example of that. So radiation, the broad subject, I really encourage you to read the chapter of radiation from my book, Small Dose of Toxicology, which gives an overview of that. We can go into a lot more detail about it, but it's a complicated subject but really deserves some study.
Okay, so now, could you explain, because this is where I think it becomes confusing for a lot of people, and I had to separate this out for myself. So when we are using a cell phone, we're being exposed to radiation, but there's also radioactive particles, like there's particles coming in the ocean, and they get into a fish, and then we eat them, and that particle gets into our bodies. So can you explain the difference between these two things?
Yes, so that's a really important distinction. So the radiation that's come from our microwave towers and our cell phones and many other gadgets that we use, Wi-Fi signals, for example, and some people do seem to have some sensitivity to this radiation, is the non-ionizing radiation. So it's low energy and generally does no harm. The ionizing radiation, which is the decay of the particles like strontium, cesium, plutonium, as well as uranium, and other radioactive elements, give off more energetic particles, and they can create ions and damage the DNA. So a radioactive particle, if we absorb those radioactive material, they can damage the DNA. The DNA can then mutate and start dividing and become cancerous. So, for example, a plutonium you can hold plutonium in your hand because it's by and large an alpha emitter. So alpha particles have very low energetic, they're larger particles, so they cannot penetrate the skin. Now the problem is if you inhale plutonium and get that particle in your lungs and it sits next to your DNA, it can cause lung cancer. So it really depends on what kind of exposure you have, whether it's an internal dose exposure or an external dose. And then there's beta particles that are more energetic. They can travel through paper. You have to have a block of wood can stop them, so they don't travel as far. And gamma radiation is highly highly damaging, very energetic. The gamma rays require lead or concrete to stop them. So we use, there's different types of radiation, and it has to do with their energy. That's sort of the best way to sum it up, whether it's low-energy or high-energy particles. And the most dangerous ones are the ionizing radiation, the high-energy particles emitted, the alpha, beta, and gamma rays.
So how prevalent is it if I'm just walking around in the world at large and I'm not, getting X-rays or something like that? How are we being exposed, and are we being exposed to a degree that we should be concerned about?
We are always being exposed, and our body has ways to try to repair some of the damage caused, for example, by the sun. But if you walk outside in the sun, you're being exposed to radiation, cosmic radiation. If you go into an airplane and you fly, you increase your exposure to cosmic rays. And we can tolerate some of that, and there's standards about that. So we're all exposed to background radiation. People that have higher elevations exposed to more radiation. And we can also have radiation from the sun contributes to greenhouse global warming and greenhouse gases that stop the radiation and trap the heat from the energy of the sun. So there's many aspects to radiation. So the concern is if you're by radioactive particles or even material are exposed to that, you can't damage your DNA. And that's why, you know, people that work around nuclear reactors, they have limits about exposure to radioactive materials, trying to limit that damage. But we also use radiation a lot. For example, dental X-rays, X-rays in hospitals, CT scans, all these use ionizing radiation X-rays that have the potential at higher dose to damage your DNA. You use those materials, for example, radiation in chemotherapy. It's used to kill the dividing cells of cancer. But on the other hand, it can also cause cancer. So we live a very tenuous relationship with radiation.
Good. We need to take a break, but we'll find out more about radiation and what we can do to protect ourselves and how much of a danger it is when we come back. My guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's a toxicologist. I'm Deborah Lindad, and you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is toxicologist Stephen Gilbert, PhD. He's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. And you can get a free copy of this book at his website, toxipedia.org. And it's a book that I think everyone should have if you only become aware of the short list of chemicals in Dr. Gilbert's book and do something about those will all go a long way towards eliminating a lot of toxics in the world. It's just an excellent guide, and I just think everyone on the planet should have one. And since it's free, everybody can have one. It's just a matter of distributing it around. So before we go on, Dr. Gilbert, I just want to point out some consumer product sources of radioactive materials. I have an article on my website called Are You Protected from Radiation Exposure? And actually, you can just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, go up to the menu at the top, and there's a little icon that looks like a magnifying glass. Click on that and type in the word radiation, and anything that I've ever written about radiation will come up. And in this article, it's got some wonderful links to various websites that will explain to you in easy terms about what radiation is. But there's also two links that I've included about where you find radioactive material in consumer products. And some of the surprising places you might find it is in dinnerware, especially they pointed out Fiesta ware, in some bathroom tile, in porcelain dentures. Let's see what else. There's actually some old glass that's kind of green and yellow called uranium glass that actually has radioactive uranium in it. There's also a camera lens, low sodium salt. In fact, in particular, anything that has potassium in it is more radioactive than things that have sodium in it. Glossy magazines. Let's see what else. Things that anti-diarrhea medication, smoke detectors, cat litter. There's a lot of things here that you just wouldn't think of. Water softener salt. Now, I don't know how much a tape dispenser. I don't know how much is in any of these things. But one of the things that we should just be aware of is that these things are all over the place. And the more we're exposed to them, cigarette smoke. Actually, in this article, it says that I was just showing you. Let me quote to you from the EPA. The EPA says, by far the largest radiation dose received by the public comes from smoking cigarettes. And they say, while cigarette smoke is not an obvious source of radiation exposure, it contains small amounts of radioactive materials which smokers bring into their lungs as they inhale. They lodge in the lung tissue and over time contribute a huge radioactive dose. So even if you're not smoking, if you're living with somebody who smokes or you're breathing cigarette smoke, that's radioactive exposure. So obviously this is something that is out there. There's two things I just want to recommend, and then we'll go back to Dr. Gilbert. There's two things I want to recommend that you can do to lessen your radioactive exposure. One is that if you think you have any radiation in your water, there's a water filter that I have the link on it on this page that removes radiation. And this is the only water filter I've ever found that removes radiation. So if that's a concern for you, if it's like raining radiation and getting into your water system or anything, any reason that you have to believe, then you can actually remove radiation from your water. Another thing that you hear commercials for every day on my radio show is liquid zeolite, pure body liquid zeolite. And that will remove radiation from your body. If you have radiation in your body, zeolite is the thing that they use when there's a meltdown in a nuclear reactor. They bring in the zeolite to absorb the radiation. And so this zeolite product will remove radiation from your body. So again, just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and click on the little magnifying glass icon, type in radiation, and you'll get several different articles that I've written with more information about where it is in consumer products and what you can do. Okay, back to you, Dr. Gilbert.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, too, another important source is radon gases. So radon can accumulate in the basement. So I urge your listeners to have their homes checked for radon, particularly in certain parts of the country. It tends to be more in other parts, in hard rock foundations, Pennsylvania, for example. You can accumulate radon gases, which are radioactive, and if you're a smoker, you'll increase the probability of cancer, lung cancer, from inhalation of radon gas.
And, of course, if you're smoking around your children, you'll increase their chances of cancer as well. Tell us some about the health effects of radiation.
So there's different health effects. The primary one is concern about cancer. For example, and you have to know where the radioactive elements are deposited. Strontium, for example, goes to bone, so then you can damage the bone marrow and come up with leukemia and other blood types of cancers. If you get plutonium, other particles in your lungs, you can get lung cancer. And the particles can also go to your kidneys. Cesium, radioactive cesium, substitutes for potassium, so it distributes throughout phosphorus, distributes throughout the body. So that can cause radioactive in a variety of organs. So my primary concern is cancer, although exposure to radioactive gamma rays, for example, can increase the likelihood of glaucoma and clouding of the lungs or the lenses in the eye and other things like that. So there's a range of health effects, but the primary one is concern about cancer. resulting from damage to the DNA.
Yeah, that just seems like such a fundamental thing, to damage your DNA.
Hmm. Yes. Like I mentioned, we have some kind of repair mechanisms, but that can easily be overwhelmed. Everybody's familiar with skin cancers that are caused by too much exposure to the sun. And we actually use sunblocks and other chemicals to block sunscreens, but they also have their own side effects. And many of them now use nanoparticles to block the sun's rays. And, you know, with greenhouse gases and the ozone, reduced amount of ozone in the atmosphere, that increases ultraviolet light. And ultraviolet light is more energetic, and that causes an increase in likelihood of skin cancers. So we have to be very careful to guard our natural environment. The Earth is a very precious thing that is being damaged by our release of material. And I think that the thing about radioactive materials, and you gave a great list of them, Deborah, is we're increasing the background radiation. The release from Fukushima is really increasing the background radiation load in our environment. And we don't really want to go there.
No, we don't need that. We need to take another break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindan, and my guest is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. His website is toxipedia.org, where you can get a whole lot of information about radiation and all kinds of other toxic chemicals. It's the best, most complete, most easy to understand information that I think is on the internet. And so I hope you all will go there and get a free copy of A Small Dose of Toxicology. And we'll be right back to talk more about radiation. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, toxicologist, author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, and his website, where you can get a free copy of this book, is toxipedia.org. Dr. Gilbert, one of the things I love about your work is that it's very interesting to read all the historical associations that you have. You don't just tell us, for example, that radiation causes cancer. You tell us the story of how they discovered that. Would you tell us that story?
You know, that's a very interesting story, how that came about. And it's starting at the turn of the century with Rodkin and others that discovered X-rays, Curie discovering radium. And it's really the fundamentals of science that were discovered from Einstein, Enrico Fermi, and development of, I mentioned before, the B reactor and the Manhattan Project in Chicago that many people probably heard of. The B reactor at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation was the first large-scale reactor to go critical, and they built a number of other reactors to create plutonium. So the first use of nuclear was with X-rays, but then it quickly evolved into creating nuclear weapons. And I just want to take a second to talk about that, nuclear power. Because right now, the nuclear power plants that were developed in the 50s with the Atoms for Peace program were the Fukushima-style Mark II, Mark I, Mark II reactors were not very safe. That's what melted down in Fukushima. But these reactors were basically designed to boil water and create steam to generate electricity. And nuclear reactors at Hanford were designed with a different purpose, to create plutonium and extract plutonium for nuclear weapons. For example, I live in the Pacific Northwest, and Bangor Submarine Base is one of the largest concentrations of nuclear weapons in the world. We spend enormous quantities of money corralling radiation. And this is a legacy of the Cold War, but in some ways that war is ongoing with nuclear weapons. And then we create all this nuclear waste from the nuclear power reactors. So I would ask everybody to really be thoughtful about radiation and the creation of more radioactive materials that we're doing for the war effort as well as for nuclear power. So I think that it has a long, complicated history. We tried to document some of the history, particularly around Hanford, in a website called the Washington Nuclear Museum and Education Center, which tries to look at the worldwide implications of Hanford. If you want to get some more insight into the history of this, particularly nuclear weapons testing, if you happen to be in Las Vegas, when you get tired of gambling and things like that, there's a nuclear testing museum that's with walking distance from the center of Las Vegas, and you go over there and look at the number of weapons that were detonated. Over 1,000 nuclear weapons were detonated outside Las Vegas to look at radiation. There's a lot of studies done on health effects, and we set some off in the Marshall Islands, destroyed a really important culture there. So we have done a lot of damage with nuclear material, and we continue to do that with exposure to radiation material and increasing the background levels of radiation in our environment. And so I urge people to sort of look at the history. I think history is just fascinating how this was developed and our ongoing legacy of nuclear material. And we're really creating a lot of ways for future generations to deal with.
I agree. And I think that something like using nuclear weapons and the nuclear waste that comes from nuclear power plants, it seems like such a big issue. Like it's not like going into a grocery store and buying organic pickles. You know, it's like, what are some of the things that we can do to help that bigger problem?
You know, this is a huge issue. And a lot of our nuclear plants are aging. I would urge everybody to look around and look at the nuclear power plants they may have in their state and ask serious questions. We have a campaign right now in Washington State. We have one nuclear reactor that's out on the Hanford testing ground or Hanford nuclear reservation. And, you know, ask the questions about how's that plant doing and are we really generating nuclear energy that is useful? I mean, it's useful energy. But what are the byproducts of that generation? What are the waste products that are being produced? Where is that waste going? Right now, we don't have any plants for the nuclear waste that generate from these plants. They generate enormous quantities of nuclear waste from the spent fuel rods that are used in these reactors. And also, the nuclear weapons industry is enormous. We spend a lot of money on that. We're now looking at redesigning nuclear bombs. And what we really need to be doing is retiring these weapons and urging our congressional leaders to move toward a nuclear-free United States.
Yay. Yes. And, you know, I would just say that in my own life, I've noticed that there are ways to be with people that result in conflict and ways to be with people that result in harmony and friendship. And I, for one, don't think that we need to have nuclear bombs. I think what we need to do is improve our relations with other countries. And I think that that's possible, that we can live in a
friendly world. I really agree with that. I mean, you look worldwide, issues like with North Korea and South Korea, North Korean nuclear weapons. India and Pakistan is a very serious area. The Washington, or the Physicians for Social Responsibility, just a couple turn of the year, released a report on nuclear famine that if Pakistan and India got into even a minor exchange of nuclear weapons, it could kill 2 billion people from creating a nuclear famine from the dust and the changes in the environment that were let loose by just the detonation of a very few nuclear weapons. So we don't need nuclear weapons to solve the world's problem. There's no problem it's going to solve.
I think that everybody should just lay down their nuclear weapons and, you know, if we have to have pistols at dawn or whatever, do something else. But don't use nuclear weapons because that would just be, like, a tragedy.
We do not need multiple Trident submarines and, you know, roaming the oceans with nuclear weapons in them.
No. No, I totally agree with you. Totally agree. Well, the story I wanted you to tell was about the Radium Girls.
Oh, the Radium Girls. Oh, that's a fascinating story. So the Radium Girls were, after World War One, you painting watch dials with radium. They also used this during World War II to paint aviation instruments. But the Radium Girls worked for a corporation that was painting, and they painted the watch dials and other instruments. And they would use the brushes, and they would use the tips of these brushes to paint the radium onto the watches. And they would sharpen these tips by putting them in their mouth. Well, the radium is a bone-seeking radioactive material, and the radium would get into the bones and cause very cancers of various sorts, mouth sores, things like that. And there were some jokes about, oh, well, radium just makes you glow a little bit better. But it turned out the owners of these plants and the scientists involved were being very careful with material, but just didn't take any, the workers were not given any guidance for taking any precautions. So five of the women that were exposed to radiation were dying from radium exposure sued. And this was one of the first suits that resulted in monetary compensation, really set the stage for some changes in workplace injury, you know, considerations of workplace exposure to materials. And not just radium, but radium is a classic example of workers being exploited and exposed to very toxic material while more knowledgeable people were very cautious about it. So it's a great story. I urge you to take a look at that story and look into the Radium Girls. There's a play about it, and I think a movie.
Wow. You have in the radium chapter of a Small Dose of Toxicology, there's a little quote from an article where it tells about how the women painted their teeth and faces and then turned off the lights for a laugh. And I can just see these women being completely innocent and not knowing that they're putting radioactive stuff on their faces, and yet they're doing it because it would make them light up. And just like
the they would die a very painful death from that. It's really tragic. It's a really horrible situation, and it's just completely avoidable.
And another example of this workplace exposure that's even earlier was the mercury that was used to make hats. The phrase "the Mad Hatter" came from hat makers being exposed to mercury, which affected them.
Right, the Mad Hatter, Lewis and Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, Mad Hatter from exposure to mercury from hat belting. And that was another really important story, trying to understand how things came along. You know, both of these, we knew the potential hazard, and we just disregarded workplace safety.
Yeah, and you know, that's still going on. That's still going on.
About that.
Yeah, that needs to be fixed. So much work to do. Anyway,
yeah,
we only have about a minute left. Is there any final words you'd like to give?
I think that we really need to be thinking about future generations. And creation of more nuclear waste is not consistent with our concern about future generations and child health, because somebody has to deal with this waste. We have no good management of it right now. And we definitely need to curtail our use of nuclear weapons and reduce the number of nuclear weapons we have. There is no reason for the world to have 17,000 nuclear weapons in the world and spend billions and billions of dollars on management and developing new delivery systems for nuclear weapons. So radiation is all over the place. We need to be very cautious about it. I urge everybody to learn a little bit more about it.
Thank you so much. And a good way to learn about it, as I said before, is to go to toxopedia.org. There's free information just right there that you can find about radiation. You can also read the radiation chapter in A Small Dose of Toxicology, Dr. Gilbert's free book about toxic chemical exposures and what you can do so you can understand the chemicals. You can also go to my website, toxicfreetalkradio.com. Go up to the menu at the top. There's a little icon that looks like a magnifying glass. Just click on that and type radiation in the search box, and several articles will come up, and you can find out more about what you can do to protect yourself, more about where there's toxic chemicals in consumer products. You can find out about Corey Trustee's soap that you can wash radiation off your skin if you're exposed to it. And there's just lots of information about all kinds of toxic chemicals and what you can do about it on my website. Again, that's toxicfreetalkradio.com. And thank you very much, Dr. Gilbert, for being with us today. And
you're very welcome. I really appreciate your show, Deborah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.